Hello and welcome to the Adventure Games Podcast. My name is Shorsha Dunbar and I'm your host.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Adventure Games Podcast. My name is Shorsha Dunbar and I hope everybody listening is doing well. Now for this episode, I was delighted to speak with James Lightfoot and Chris Horry, who are the developers and the writers of upcoming adventure game Sleepy Time Village. James Lightfoot has been on this podcast before, and I spoke to him last year at WASD. He previously made The Mystery of Woolly Mountain, which was a very highly rated game. I played a little bit of it, haven't had a chance to finish it yet myself, but I hope to soon. He's now working on something that's quite different, certainly tone-wise. He came on the podcast to talk about that. And Chris Horry is a comic book writer and artist and all-round, you know, musician, as well as James is as well. And they have a Kickstarter for their upcoming game, Sleepy Time Village. Now, I've already spoken about this a little bit. I played a demo and I loved it. I loved the look of it. Gameplay-wise, there's some fair but challenging puzzles. I love the character. I just love the whole concept. And I really hope that the Kickstarter does well and that it they can make their goal and beyond, because I really, really do believe that this game will be great. And so I spoke to James and Chris all about the game and about the comic as well, which the game is based on, which is also set to be released late 2024, early 2025, hopefully. And it also looks fantastic, and I hope to read that as well. So anyway, here is all about the game Sleepy Time Village and the comic. No spoilers, of course. But first, here is a trailer for the game, followed by my interview with James Lightfoot and Chris Horry. Please enjoy.
What a bloody day. Where's my cab? Can't be late. Can't be late. So tired.
Mimi! Mimi!
Where am I?
The sun is up. A lovely day. It's time to leave the house and play.
What? Who's saying that?
Oh, I think there's something living in that.
I told you not to play with Daddy's keys.
I don't like the look of this.
What is this place?
Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of the Adventure Games Podcast. There we go. I didn't know for a second what it was, but I'm delighted to be joined by the developers and the writer of Sleepy Time Village, James Lightfoot, the lead developer and the writer of the comics, Steve Horry. That was correct, wasn't it? Was that the correct pronunciation?
Yeah, you're there, mate. Yeah.
I was practicing. I asked you beforehand, but I think I said it slightly differently than before
recording. Try a different pronunciation every time you speak to me, and then let's see at what point I start to notice.
Oh, well, I am delighted to have you guys. And I told you before recording, I wasn't expecting to have you, Steve, here. So it's a delight to have you. And thank you, James, for having you on, because we can talk more about the comics that the game is based on, I'm really looking forward to hearing more about as well. So first of all, how are you guys doing? James, how are you doing since we spoke last year? You've been busy in the last year.
Yeah, very busy, but very good, thanks. You know, juggling family life, work life with you know, dev life, which is, you know, the one that I enjoy the most, and music life, actually. But yes, we've been working really hard trying to get everything ready with Stevie Time Village, not ready, but just advanced, you know, for this launch of our Kickstarter that we find ourselves in.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll talk about it, Jerry, but in case I forget to mention it, your game is on Kickstarter right now, time of recording and the time that this podcast goes out. It is on Kickstarter, so if you are interested, and I'm pretty sure a lot of Adventure Game fans would be, then, and if you can, then make sure to back it because it looks amazing. And even if you're listening to this months afterwards, you can wishlist or hopefully buy the game. So there we go. Just thought I'd get that in there. And Steve, how are you doing? Because this is the first time we've spoken.
I know, right? No, it's good. Pretty much the same as James, but with music and comics and stuff thrown on top of that. It's just it's a lovely sunny day outside. Chores to do once we're done. I've got to go and build some stuff in the garden. I've no doubt James has got a stack of chores for me as well around the Kickstarter, which, you know, I can't see him tapping, but there is a to-do list. It's building and it's coming my way. I can smell it.
Oh, that sounds like what I know of James. All right,
he's cracking the whip
in a good way.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, the dude is a driver. You know, like James makes stuff happen.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I wanted to ask you guys, and I think that we spoke about this, James, as well, because you and your brother, you are involved, as you just mentioned, in a lot of things. You have a family. I believe you have kids, right?
Two kids.
And you have a job, full-time job, and you're involved in a band. And now you're making an adventure game, which, from what people have told me, is a very time-consuming thing to do. So all by itself, you know, there are people who are full-time game developers, and they have told me that, yeah, this is a very time-consuming, you know, process. So how do you juggle everything? How do you make sure that, you know, you're a father, husband, and you do your day job in a band and making this game, which looks great, and launching this Kickstarter? First question was, how do you juggle everything? How do you, you know, manage your time?
It's a good question. I don't know.
Give me some advice.
Yeah. I think, you know, like, I just thrive on multitasking. You know, like, if being busy means that I just kind of power through. Obviously, you know, our game is about a neglectful family man, so like I have to make sure I don't become what we are.
I was going to say, sorry for interrupting, I was hoping that this doesn't become based on either of you, that this character, from what I've played of him, he seems very stressed. He's not answering the phone to his wife, and he's doesn't, you know, not happy in his family life. I really hope that this isn't you guys.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, we try and balance at the weekends, and, you know, when I'm with my kids and wife, I am fully involved as much as possible. At work, you know, I kind of, I've got myself in a good position where I can kind of, I don't have to like specifically make things, I make sure things happen. So I, you know, sometimes I might do a little bit of dev at work or on the way to work or on the way home or evenings, you know, when, you know, I have my own time. And with the band, you know, that's kind of rehearsed once a week, so it's like a night out, really, you know. So it kind of just all falls into place so far, you know. There are no, apart from this Kickstarter, which, you know, we had you know, we were going to release it in November and we were kind of ready then, and but some things happened in our lives, so we just put it back a little while, which is, you know, much wiser thing to do anyway. Apart from the Kickstarter, which we gave ourselves that deadline, the game doesn't, you know, yes, I want it to come out Halloween next year, but yeah, right now it's just focusing on the Kickstarter, so I think everything will be fine. In terms of everything done.
I think there's a, just to piggyback off that, right, there's a thing, like we've talked about this before, where, you know, for both of us, there isn't an alternative. We just make it work because, you know, we're both, without sounding like one of those types, we're both very creative people, and there's different things that we both want to do and we both like to create. And like James was saying there, you know, the comic that the story is based on came from me sat on a train commuting and writing it on the way in and writing it on the way back. And other times I've sat on that commute. I mean, I don't have to commute anymore, which is lovely. but I've sat on that commute with a laptop and my headphones on writing music, or, you know, unfortunately the trains rock too much to make drawing possible because my hand's not that steady. But, you know, in terms of just grabbing every available piece of time and doing it. And I don't watch much TV. This is my alternative. I like to lock myself in this room and piddle around with instruments. Do you know what I mean? It's just, you make it happen because it's your thing. You know, it's, I can't imagine not doing this stuff. So you don't neglect your family. You don't ignore everyone around you, but you take your little moments, you lock yourself away because, you know, you do need your own little space.
Absolutely.
And your own little thing.
Yeah, yeah. Just for everyone, I think.
Ours just happens to have a end product.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's great. Great to hear that the main character isn't based on anybody of you guys. But yeah, before we talk about the game, Steve, because it's your first time on the podcast, well, first of all, a question that I ask everyone, might ask you, James, I believe I did ask you before as well. But Steve, do you have any favorite adventure narrative games? Are you a gamer yourself, or what can you tell us? So what are your favorite games, if you have any?
So I was never really, I was a gamer when I was a teenager, and I fell out of the habit after because I was in bands and running around playing gigs all over Europe and doing all that kind of, and drinking. And so I got dragged into that. And so when James got in contact, I'd played Woolly Mountain because I'd backed his previous game because I'd backed that on Kickstarter and loved it. And then when James got in contact with me and said, you know, do you want to make a point and click adventure game? It's like, I'm not quite sure what that is, but let's go with it. And so James recommended a couple, and my absolute favorite, because of the sense of humor, the style of art, the voice acting, the music, everything about it was wonderful, it was Little Misfortune. You know, it's got a real dark sense of humor. And, you know, that was the one where, you know, because I'm a bit of a, someone suggests something to me and it sounds like I could squeeze it in. Even if it's something I've not dabbled in before, I'm kind of like, well, you know, I'll give that a go. It might be, you know, I ended up pub quiz hosting for a couple of years around nerdy subjects.
Just because, another thing to add to the list.
Oh, it was just ridiculous. You know, and it's not something I'd ever considered, but that was quite successful because it was all kind of like, you know, we did the Doctor Who and Star Wars. We did a Fallout one, you know, stuff. Loads of different subjects. And, you know, that was really good fun. And it's not something I'd ever considered. And so if someone says something to me and it's someone I like and it sounds like it could be fun, I tend to say yes. And so when James came to me with this, you know, I was like, well, that could be fun. I'd quite like to do the soundtrack. That might be a nice little challenge. And we talked about it a little bit. And then obviously he gave me those examples. Broken Age was another one James gave me, and I sort of played that. And I was kind of really enjoying that. And that was my sort of induction. So James
good,
kind of...
Good choices.
Let's blame it on the Lightfoot. But, you know, he's a connoisseur. And it was just really cool. You know, so I was like, yeah, let's do one of these. And thankfully, Ken, who... So Ken Reynolds was the editor on the comic and the letterer, and was really instrumental in pushing me to develop the story in a way that made sense. And Ken is more of a gamer and was very much able to, you know, get more involved in the mechanics of this piece. So I'm in terms of the game, my role tends to be to, you know, write some dialogue, make sure we stick true to the concept and the story, you know, because the game goes in very different directions to the comic. The start point's the same, the end point's the same, but you've not got like a fixed 75 page, 80 page limit with the game. So, you know, you can go off on all the little tangents that we had to discard because the comic had to get from A to B and finish. And so Ken was really instrumental in bringing that in and making it playable. Like, I think a lot of the puzzles were developed by James and Ken, you know, and some of that internal infrastructure, new areas were created for the game, which again comes down to Ken and James working in collaboration.
Yeah, no, fantastic. Well, some great choices. There, of course, James's previous game, Woolly Mountain. What is it? It's a long title, isn't it? It's
Mystery of Woolly Mountain. Yes,
Mystery of Woolly Mountain. Yes, that's it. No, I started playing that. I really enjoyed it, but I don't know. I think I got it. It was a challenging game, and I meant to get back to it, but then, you know, different things kept. But I do mean to get back to it because I was, and I think we spoke that you did the voices for the characters there, didn't you?
I did the majority of the voices. Yeah, my brother and I. I did the main bulk, then Dave did quite a few, and then like some other randoms. Did the voice for that. But yes, that's now on version 10. So if anyone wants to get hold of Woolly Mountain on Steam, Itch or GOG, it's you know, the best version there is. Or iPhone.
Perfect. And it has got some very good reviews as well that I've been reading. So I'd encourage people to check it out. And if you want, you know, some good challenging puzzles as well, because that's something that a lot of people say with a lot of modern adventure games. But in your game, you know, it's a good story. It's very funny. And there's, you know, some good challenging puzzles from what I've played and what I've read about it. So, James, well, apart from your game, we can add voice actor to your list of talents then as well. Again, before we talk about Sleepy Time Village, have you had the time to play even demos of any modern adventure games or check out any? And again, I wouldn't be surprised if you said no, being too busy, but also I wouldn't be surprised if you said yes. I've also squeezed in some games and whatever else you're doing.
I mean, I think it's healthy and really good to play, you know, some of the newer, you know, acclaimed titles in the point and click world. So I really enjoyed The Excavation of Hobbs Barrow.
Yes, very good.
Really enjoyed that. And, you know, I mean, I'll probably mention that again in terms of Sleepy Time Village a bit later. But yeah, really loved that. Really loved Lucy Dreaming by the wonderful Tom at Tall Story Games. And loved Hair of the Dog demo as well.
I played that as well, yeah.
Yeah, and funny enough, Tom played Sleepy Time Village demo at WASD WASD last weekend, so I enjoyed seeing him. What else have I played? Lamplight City, I've been playing.
Yes, another great game from Francisco Gonzalez.
Yeah, which I started, you know, only recently, but it's fantastic, so obviously can't wait for Rosewater as well. And a couple other demos... The Adventures of Brian Scott, played that as well. Mm-hmm. And trying to think of any others apart from, you know, Return to Monkey Island. So they're just a few.
Yeah, some great choices. I think I've played all or most of them as well. But because you also, James, you're also very good at helping to promote other people's games as well. That I see you online and, you know, you're very good at retweeting, very nice at retweeting other people's, which is great to see in a community that you guys don't seem to consider each other as rivals. That you kind of retweet each other's games, and I find similar with podcasts. And we were talking beforehand, you know, I listen to other venture game podcasts, that these were on the Hotspot, and there's other Savior Game, which is another recent one. I think it's good for the community.
100%, you know, like, you know, people speak of the you know, been re-energized, the point and click world. So, you know, obviously the more we can make it bigger by helping each other out and have successes, then obviously it's going to anyway, you know, come back round and help your own game out anyway. So, and, you know, as mentioned, a lot of these games that are at demo stage now that are coming are wonderful, and so are the devs, so I always want to...
Exactly, yeah. No, the people are behind the games are really nice, you know, like you guys as well, but that's what I found speaking to them as well, that everyone is very passionate about their games, other people's games as well, and about the whole, you know, genre and community, which is really great to see as well. Well, that's a fantastic recommendations there. And Steve, before we talk about Sleepy Time Village... you said you're a writer. So what do you do yourself before you started writing, coming up with Sleepy Time Village? So what can you tell us about some of the works, that things that you've done beforehand?
I've done loads of random stuff.
Very quick reading of you.
Very quick version. I've run a club night for many years, the pub quiz hosting piece. I've done probably the two works I'm most proud of are books I did the art on, and it's The Islanders, which was a graphic novel with Eddie Argos from Art Brute and the comedian Amy Mason, which was a book based on their lo-fi musical, and that was a project I genuinely loved. I did another book with Eddie for Image Comics called Double D, and then I did a bunch of stuff with Comic House, which was an independent comics publisher, which had an anthology and a bunch of miniseries, and I did some stuff for them, which was really cool and really good fun. So yeah, as a writer, they're the main pieces, or as an artist, they're the main pieces.
Very, very nice. So you've done a lot. Now, you mentioned before that you Can correct me if I'm wrong, but he came up with the story for the Sleepy Time Village, or he started writing that on the train. So for people who haven't maybe heard about Sleepy Time Village, or even just to remind us, what is the story of it, or what is the general story of it, and how did you come up with this story?
So the high level pitch we use is Life on Mars meets the Magic Roundabout, or In the Night Garden. It's essentially about a father who's, you know, I think we might be being a little bit unfair calling him neglectful, but he is neglecting his family and putting work first. He goes to work one day after ignoring his daughter. His wife has her first night out since their daughter was born. He's got to be home in time for it. Instead, he takes on a late night meeting, falls asleep in the cab, wakes up in a children's storybook world. So, you know, basically it came from, and the game and the book is all about why is he there? How the hell does he get out? And it came from, you know, I've got two kids, and I've said this a lot, but you kind of, when you're a parent, or when you first become a parent, you're like, I'm not going to just use TV as a crutch and just stick them in front of the TV. I'm going to be there all the time, and they're going to be doing stuff, which, you know, isn't realistic for anyone's sanity. And basically, you find yourself at 3 a.m, and you know, CBeebies comes out, and I became sort of fascinated by In the Night Garden, or Moon and Me. And Moon and Me is from the same people who make In the Night Garden. There's this character in it called Collywobble. It's all sort of stop motion animation, and Collywobble is kind of a clown, but looks a bit like a 60s Doctor Who Cyberman as a clown. And with the stop motion movement as well, Collywobble is terrifying. And so it came from this thought of, you know, because there's all the characters and they're all in the bed together, and the wife, Christ, imagine turning around, waking up, and there's Collywobble in your bed, you'd freak out. And I was looking for this idea for a new comic anyway, and so I messaged Ken, and I was like, oh, I think I've got it. Ken, I've got an idea for a new comic. Cool, what is it? I said, Life on Mars, but he wakes up in the night garden. Ken's like, great, that's a pitch. What's the story? And I was like, well, da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, that's a bit more of a story, but why should I care? And Ken just kept prodding and prodding and prodding. I've still got the emails, which show the development process as my thinking, as Ken is poking me until my thought process is there, and there's a story. So it's you know, there's a bit of It's a Wonderful Life in there. There's a bit of A Christmas Carol, you know, that whole, you know, there's no new stories or whatever. You know, we take in a whole load of elements from those kind of stories where, you know, the character starts as a bit of a ding-dong. Well, there's no bit about it. The character is a ding-dong at the very beginning, and he has to learn to be better to, you know, and that's where the story came from. Now, you know, obviously when creating this, I wanted characters that would appeal to children and freak adults out in the same way that I was freaked out by Collywobble when my kids adored him. You know, sort of, oh, it's not clear what gender, but, you know, whatever. My daughter is a really keen artist. She's 10 now, so, but you know, she's a keen artist, keen gamer, and between the ages of about 3 and 5, she was drawing all these characters, and they were terrifying. You know, you had this kind of paper doll with a hole in its head and cold dead eyes. You had this kind of purple rabbit creature, which you can helpfully see behind James right now, with big spiky teeth.
That is creepy.
You know, when it's moving and it's coming right towards you at the front of the screen, it's horrific. It's one of my favorite bits. And you know, so we took these characters, and you know, I started working with an artist called Yulia Lapko, and we'd pass Marnie's drawings over to her, and she would interpret them in this sort of style we were developing for the game. And then it all sort of started building up from there. Wrote a script. You know, once Yulia had done a couple of test pages, because it requires a bit of versatility, you know, you need that sort of real world, that you need the real world sort of characters to contrast really heavily with the storybook world. And Yulia's adaptable enough to be able to kind of create that visual. And we got a publisher, but, you know, Yulia's Ukrainian, so had to leave and create a new life over here a little while ago. So we're a little bit delayed, but we have 3 pages left to go, and then boom. We can finally shoot that over to the publisher, and hopefully that'll come out soon. Sorry, that was the TLDR.
No, fantastic.
The TLDR version of that answer.
Yeah, no, fantastic. It really helps to explain how this kind of story and comic came to life. And then apologies, you mentioned Ken, and I don't know if you mentioned him before, but who is Ken and what was his role in this?
So Ken is the letterer and editor on the comic, and he's a co-writer has been a co-writer on the game. Basically, he's an absolute genius. He's a comic writer in his own right. He's written a bunch of stuff. I met him through Comic House because we were looking for a letterer for one of the books I was doing for the anthology, and he and I don't know. I think there's a sort of shared sense of humor. We quickly became quite firm friends, and. You know, I read some of his comics and they were, there's one called Cognition, which is kind of a steampunk occult detective story. And, you know, it's magnificent. Ken's got a brain on him. And when we started working on this and, you know, like I said, that process of him prodding and prodding and prodding, it was like, oh, you get this. And, you know, obviously when James came to talk to us and we started developing the game, Ken's someone I could trust who got it, who, you know, could take a bit more of a lead on the game writing, because he's he's been there from the beginning and he's got the right mindset. He's a very, very talented man.
Perfect. What's his last name in case people wanted to check?
Ken Reynolds.
Ken Cognition. Reynolds.
So Cognition is the comic and I thoroughly recommend it.
Perfect. I might check it out for myself then. Well, thank you for that, Steve. And then James, over to you then, because we've heard about the origins of the comic. How did you get involved in, and why did you, what appealed to you about this to make a game out of it? And how did you get involved then contacting Steve? Did you know Steve beforehand? And what appealed to you in particular that made you think this could be a great game?
So I've known Steve for a very long time through, you know, the music world, us both being in bands, and our paths have crossed, you know, for years, supporting each other and being at the same gigs or parties or whatnot. And through Comic House and, you know, other social media pieces, I'd seen he'd been, you know, involved in these wonderful comics, particularly one that I backed on Kickstarter called Lizard Men that I really liked. And I am making another game as well, just to throw that into the pot of things that I'm doing.
Yeah. You're not busy enough already.
I know. So I realized that, you know, Woolly Mountain had been out for ages, you know, had been out for ages, and I wasn't actively making another game. So I started working on something completely different, like a run and gun detective.
I remember you showing me that at WASD last year.
Exactly. So I was working on that with my good friend, Ed Harding, who's the artist on that, you know, just to do something different from the point and click world and see if I could do that. And the artist is wonderful, really good, but obviously I'm a very impatient person. And, you know, I was like, right, I'm going to make another point and click game. I want to make an even better, you know, a better one this time, really, really, you know, acclaimed, hopefully. So I contacted Steve and I was like, listen, I want to make a point and click based on your comic series, Lizard Men. And Steve was like, well, that's nice, but I think you should take a look at this new thing I'm working on, and that will probably be better to make a point and click game from. So he sent me the story as it was then, you know, the novel, the graphic novel. And I was like, this is brilliant. This is perfect. This is just perfect for a point and click. You know, I don't have to, you know, kind of Lizard Men was a, you know, really great series, but you know, quite intricate in stuff that was going on. With Sleepy Time Village, you're taking someone and you're putting him in this village and he needs to get out, you know, and it's kind of a simpler premise that just fits perfectly into a point and click adventure. And I was like, sold. And I met the team, I met Yulia, I met Ken, and everyone was really excited to, you know, to turn the graphic novel into a point and click game. And so we began, you know, we just began working things out. How would we do it? And Yulia created some game specific art to see if it could work. We started, you know, getting the some of the characters animated, and it was really just coming to life, you know, really well. Some of the background shots are literally lifted from the graphic novel. Others have been, you know, transformed into new locations, obviously, that we need for the game. And then I would sit down with Ken, and we would, as Steve mentioned, evolve and write you know, the puzzles and everything. And I mentioned the excavation of the Hobbs Barrow earlier, because to me, what I really love about that game, and what we want to achieve with Sleepy Time Village, is to, you know, keep it as a really satisfying, you know, experience. I don't want it to be like hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of gameplay, and mm-hmm. off you go, intricate and lost, and side quests and, you know, crafting or whatever, or different things. I like the excavation of Hobbs Barrow. I want it to be a great story that you really enjoy. You know, you experience it, you love it, you want it on your shelf, you will go back to it and, you know, tell other people about it. And that's how I feel about excavation of Hobbs Barrow. And again, I say that is because right at the very beginning, Ken and I had all these ideas to, you know, loads of different endings and kind of, you know, different ways things can happen and you know, and so on and so on. And then I played Hobbs Barrow and I was like, actually, I don't want all these loads of different things. I want this concise, brilliant piece. So yeah, and here we are, Steve and I working every day, you know, or communicating every day, having evolved it to a great demo, the Kickstarter ready, and, you know, loads of other scenes being worked on and new locations and just new avenues to the story that, you know, I'm really excited about. And I know, Steve, you are, like, the extra elements we've added onto this.
Oh, yeah.
In the novel to, like, really flesh out the world. And, yeah.
It's nice for me to get surprises. Mm-hmm. You know, like if something new comes up, you know, or James does something and I wasn't expecting it, it's like, oh, that's... And to be involved in a piece of art that started from something, you know, me tapping away on the train, and suddenly there's this extra stuff coming into it. And I can see it almost as a punter, you know, being surprised by it. And you know, I mentioned my daughter doing the art, doing the initial character design. You know, for her as a kid, first seeing the characters brought to life as images in a comic, and then seeing what James has done with animation and scenes and so on, you know, it's been mind-blowing for her. I mean, you know, thankfully we've got a less potty-mouthed option in the game now, so I don't have to encourage her with the swears. Yeah, it's because the contrast of swear versus children's storybook world is too irresistible. You know, it's just, it is fun. One of my favorite splash pages in the book, and is just a great big splash page with the first view of the village and this gleaming sun with a smiley face and a smiley baby's face, and just the lead character dropping the F-bomb, and you know, it's just that contrast, you know, it's the sort of thing I love. So but obviously I'm not gonna, before we had that option, it was very much a, okay, Marnie, I'm going to show you this, but there will be words that you mustn't repeat, whereas now we've turned that off or there's an option to turn that off.
Well, I was going to ask about that, but first of all, I think it's great, Steve, that you're really supporting your daughter, that, you know, first of all, encouraging her to draw and everything, and then using her drawings not just as inspiration but following on from that. So I'm sure she's absolutely thrilled, and they are genuinely beautiful from what I can see. So I think she's got a great career ahead of her.
She's really good. I mean, like, you know, the stuff in the game, you can see the original drawings when she was 3 or 5, but now she's really inspired by that sort of chippy style. And, you know, she does these drawings that are, you know, I realize I'm her father, so I'm going to sound, you know, I'm going to be biased. But, you know, it's also quite nice that the team, you know, like Yulia is really encouraging Amani's art. And, you know, Ken made her some stickers of the characters when he was working at a print shop, you know, and you know, Yulia's always sending really encouraging messages, and it's kind of, you know, it's team as family, and it's just really, you know, because James and I have known, like James said, we've known each other for years, and, you know, I'm really good friends with his brother as well. I work with his brother on music, and so having that kind of unit is within a creative project is lovely.
Yeah, no, that's it's really fantastic. I'm sure it's encouraging her, but it's not, you know, it's also encouraging her to even get better and continue to develop as well, and yourselves as well. But that's lovely to hear. And James, you know what you said as well about Hobbs Barrow, it's a, you know, relatively short game, but yeah, I, like with you, I prefer a shorter, more concise, really good game than is hours of, you know, crafting or open, again, not even against open world. First of all, I don't have the time to play 100 hours in, you know, dedicate 100 hours in one game. Now, I've heard Baldur's Gate 3 is absolutely fantastic. I'm not sure I'll ever get to play it because it is so long. But yeah. So I do need to say that I've heard it's absolutely amazing. But I also, you know, if a game is, and I know a lot, some players, they come players, oh, the game is only three or four hours. It's too expensive for that. But I'm curious, okay, what do we get in those 3, 4, 5 hours? Is it really good? Is it a really good, concise story with good gameplay? Because then I'd be happy to spend whatever, 20, 30 euros if we get that. And just because a game is long, like even 15, 20 hours, a lot of that could be like crafting or just going, you know, it might not be that interesting. So yeah. I am with you, is what do you do with the time in the game? Sorry, I kind of went on a bit of a tangent.
No, it's the same with stories though, right? I mean,
yeah,
you know,
comics as well, actually. Or stories in general. Yeah, short stories could be.
Short stories, it's an art form, you know. It's to be able to say what you want within a, you know, 10 pages max or whatever. You know, some people can even do it in 5 pages. You know, it's wonderful. You know, you get introduced to plot, and to make people care in that space of time is a genuine skill. So I'm with you on that. You get on that higher horse, and I'm joined up. Get on the back.
Exactly. Well, from speaking of Hobbs Barrow, the developers Cloak and Dagger Games, they made the free game. I think, I don't know if it's based on Lovecraft or Edgar Allan Poe. It's A Terrible Old Man or something along those lines. It's about 20 minutes, half an hour. It's fantastic. It has a, you know, fantastic story, you know, beginning, middle, and end. And it's really stuck with me. And it's only 20 minutes, half an hour. So it is possible. I would happily have paid for that game. I was going to ask about the swearing option, because there was quite a bit of swearing in the version I played last year. So you got, and as I told you, James, we'll talk more about the options in the gameplay as well. But you guys have decided to give an option of not to swear. Is that it?
Yeah. So I remember saying, I was like, should we have the swearing? Should we go for it? And I actually went on Discord and had a really long, like, I started a bit of a chain of a conversation on, you know, one, should I have swearing in the game? And two, if I do have swearing, should we go for it? So, like, should we just, because, you know, the idea is that he is, you know, Rufus is a man from a real world. And if you were in this village, you know, if you woke up in this place, you would definitely be swearing, right? Because you'd be like, what is going on? So there's swearing in the graphic novel for that juxtaposition piece. And I was like, I think we should. We had a long conversation. We went, right, let's go for it. And in the original demo, there's that you played last year, there is a lot of swearing with the C-bomb, with the F-bomb, lots of the bombs, right?
All of them.
But it's now like, a lot of those have gone because I've changed how that opening scene plays out. We've just made it more, so the opening scene is more like it's literally a scene setter to move you on. You don't have to, you know, spend loads of time in that scene, which obviously brought a lot of the swearing in, because it was a bit stress-inducing. Yeah. That was some of the feedback I got, so we changed it to be just a bit more like, it's setting the scene, get in the taxi, kind of move on, let's get into the village. But yes, I would lie awake at night thinking, have we made an error having swearing in? And then I was like, right, I'm putting the option in, then we're happy. If the option's there, you can turn it off. You know, the vibe is the same, you know, it's kind of asterisked out and there's a bleep where the swear would be. But then I was happy because if an individual does not like swearing, they can remove it. But we're not changing the kind.
There was literally only one person. So all there was, there was, you know, a people constantly playing the thing. But literally only one person went for the no swearing option, which I thought was quite funny. But then I also think, you know, like a well-timed beep can be really funny as
well.
Very
funny. I mean, in a typical Park, Ransom the Clown, is hilarious, where he just beeps all the time. And I think creative swearing can be very funny. And the Walking Dead comics, and Negan.
Yeah. Or like the Thick of It. Did you ever watch The Thick of It?
No, I don't think I have. But it's...
it's one of my favourite sitcoms ever. Malcolm Tucker. Like, Peter Capaldi's command of rude language is it's a joy to behold. Yeah, it is a joy to behold.
Yeah, I think it can be very, very funny. But I also like the option if you're playing this, because the game, you know, it looks like not a kid's game, but it's something that kids might be interested in. So if a father or mother wanted to play with their kids, you know, or you said if you don't like swearing for whatever reason, I think it's good to have the option to turn it off. I would probably play it with swearing because I think it's be funny, but you know, I said I'm a fan of options.
I think people appreciate that. Yeah, and on that, you know, like I guess through my indecision, the player now has a plethora of options. So for example, I couldn't decide. So I saw a really good A Night of the Wolf, I think, which I haven't played the demo yet. Is it Night of the Wolf? Have you seen that point and click?
Is it Night of the Wolf or Night in the Woods or
Night in the Woods? I need to Google it. Anyway, it's a brilliant game. I'm, you know, from what I've seen, I keep meaning to play the demo. And I was watching Yak Rack Slip's YouTube of reviewing it. And I really liked the way the inventory, you know, came down when you hovered in the top area of the screen, and it came down in a nice little concise bar. And I was like, oh, that's nice. Because we had this kind of taking up a lot of the screen inventory piece, and I was like, oh, I don't know now. I don't know which one I prefer. And again, I went on Discord and I was like, what do we prefer? And people were like, well, it depends how many objects you're carrying or all these other kind of pieces. And I couldn't decide, so in the end I was like, right, the player can choose. so you can have the inventory come up at the bottom, you can have it at the top, or you can have the screen, full screen version. And you can change it at any time in the game as well, because I was just like, it's up to you.
Okay, so fantastic.
Another option, as well as all the kind of, you know, resolution options. I just thought, you know, it's a good option. And even I, when I, you know, test the demo, I sometimes pick a different one, you know, because you can.
Was it difficult to implement, you know, to implement the UI, the different inventory? Because I don't think I've seen that in any adventure game where you have the option for inventory. And again, I'd like that because different people have different preferences. You know, as you mentioned, the inventory at the top, some people like it at the bottom, some people like and to click the icon. Exactly.
And so, that's why I went for it, because it was not conclusive of, you know, like a definite answer of this is the better inventory. Everyone liked it for different reasons. So in it went, and it wasn't difficult to implement. So I
think for other adventure game developers, this could be something, because, you know, as I said, I am a fan of options. You know, let the player choose. Of course, there has to be some, you know, there has to be some things that you have to say, okay, no, this is the way the game is. Yeah. You know, this is the game that we're making, so we can't have maybe too many options. But I think some options, I think, like in this case, I think it's a very good idea.
The way we interact with stories is a very personal thing as well. And, you know,
that's true.
The good thing about this kind of game is it is a story and you are working through that story. And if, you know, little things that can make it personalize it to how you, to your way of seeing things or the way you like to work, I just think it kind of helps, doesn't it? It sort of smooths it over, and it's inviting the reader or the player or whoever and saying, you know, yeah, there are things there are things that we can't, you know, we wouldn't take crowdsource opinions on, but there are things that it's really handy to kind of get that opinion. And when you find that different people like different things, it's like, well, it's not, you know, James has done it, and it's not, you know, it's helped him live with not having to make a decision.
But I think that's great. And is it still possible to save the game or manually save the game, or are there just auto saves? Because this is a thing for me.
So there are also saves at points, you know, so every time you enter a scene, it will save.
Okay.
Because, like, then you're never going to
Yeah.
If it crashed or something.
Exactly.
But you can then save when you want as well. Save, quit, happy. You know, so you're not, it's not going to kind of, nothing's going to change between scenes. So you're not going to like save over something that you didn't want to do, if you know what I mean. So yeah, you have both choices again. And I think from feedback, thank you, Discord groups, you know, like again, about saving, and I see that conversation a lot. And you know, talking with to Tom from Tall Story Games, you know, a on scene start autosave, I think, is a good choice. Plus, you can save when you want.
Yeah, no, I do understand there are some games, especially like non-linear games or choices matter games, you know, like the Telltale games or Life is Strange, that they don't want players, you know, save scumming. But I also, my counterpoint would be, you know, we're all busy. You guys have kids. You guys are doing 100 other things. Sometimes we would have to stop and quit the game at short notice because, you know, we get a knock on the door or dinner is burning or whatever.
Houses on fire, things like that.
Houses on fire, you know, kids are running around or whatever. Dog is escaping on the road. Yeah. And it's like, oh, but I just need to finish this scene because it won't save. And I find it, again, because I don't have a huge amount of, you know, free time to have to go back and play, even if it's 5-10 minutes of a game, simply because it wouldn't save. I personally find that really frustrating. So I'm delighted to hear that, you know, it can save and quit, or manual saves, and you can save in different scenes. I think autosaves are important, again, if you forget to save. If you quit the game, you forget to save. But I'm delighted to hear that again. Anyone who listens to this podcast knows that it is a bugbear of mine. So thank you for that. And then I wanted to ask you about the gameplay and the puzzles. Because obviously, Steve, when you covered the story, it was for a comic. It was for linear, and it was, you know, comics and books, you know, they're more passive. They're not interactive. But then, James, when you came on board, made a game, it's a different medium, you know, interactive, and it's same story, again, as you mentioned, Steve, from the beginning to end, but then how to get there. So how did you guys come up with the puzzles and the gameplay to make this story fit the game? And was that a challenge?
So it's probably the most challenging part, obviously, of a point and click or, you know, a narrative adventure, because you have to be very careful of, you know, moon logic. Right, you know, like use the chicken with the door to open the door, but oh, it worked because, you know, X, Y, Z, and it's a bit, you feel a bit cheated, for example, with that way. But you don't want it just to be use the key with the door, because that's a bit boring and obvious.
Sure, as well. So there is this kind of it's so, either too easy or not too much moon logic. It's like you find a balance.
Exactly, and you know, in certain puzzles in Woolly Mountain, you know, some people thought it you know, was a bit moon logic here and there. And I took that on board. And certainly with the demo, I'm really proud of it because, you know, again, at WASD, we watched countless people play it and countless people sit there until they completed it, which was great as well, because it showed that they were immersed in the world and they were loving it. And you know, we watched them follow a path that we kind of set out, really. And no one, you know, asked for help or was stuck, really, you know, and gave up. I would, with each person who sat down, I would say, if you need any help, I'm right here, but I will leave you to it, because I know people just like to click in on everything or just get invested in the demo. But we watched people complete it in the right way, in the right amount of time, not too easy, not too hard. You know, they had their eureka moment, which was, you know, earned, you know, and our little pointers guided them through. So when you play the demo and you play those puzzles, like I'm really proud of that, number one. Number two, kind of, they just came to us sometimes, some of those puzzles, like, you know, again, with the demo, how you unlock the door, I really enjoyed what you have to do, where you have to get the pieces to achieve that, you know, no spoilers. And outside of the demo, further on, you know, working with Ken, there's still quite a bit to do in terms of some of those puzzles later in the game, but certainly act one into act two, again, I'm happy with the puzzles because I think they, it's your classic case of, right, you know, we're talking about the graphic novel. How do you get from this bit to this bit? Well, here we're going to go this way. And, you know, you're going to have to venture and help people out before they'll let you do a certain thing. Or, you know, you can't get on the train until, you know, the train, which you can't quite see this train up here on the cover. You can't get that going until you do some certain things and you have to get, you know, but it will all feel a very, again, thinking of Hobbs Barrow, you know, it's not the puzzles aren't like, I'm going to keep using everything with everything until it works, you know.
Yeah,
it's very like, it's not handed to you, but you know, you're guided.
Well, it works with the logic, right? And it conceptually ties in. So the way you get into the, you unlock the door, as you mentioned earlier, right? If you are, when you see it, it makes total conceptual sense with everything else you see in there. And I think that's where, you know, Ken and James have taken it for the rest of the game as well. It's sort of, it all ties back into that thing of trying to find the joy in childlike things and, you know, childhood joy of creativity. It all ties in and the puzzles fit to that and the world fits in that as well.
Yeah. And it's been fun. That's what I can say. Like, I enjoy or look forward to people, you know, playing it and being guided through these puzzles and, you know, doing these puzzles and stuff. So, yeah, it's going to be fun.
Yeah, no, sounds fantastic because, and I believe Jack mentioned this to you when you were on the Adventure Game Hotspot, that there are a few certainly modern games that don't have a lot of gameplay or they are just adding, you know, choices as the gameplay, which I enjoy myself. But I also like, in a point-and-click adventure game, especially to get stuck in into gameplay and, you know, some challenging puzzles, but not moon logic-y that are frustrating. And what are your thoughts on, I guess the puzzles, they should, you know, people should be able to resolve them. But what are your thoughts on hint system? Because as you mentioned, different people play games differently. Some people, again, especially traditional adventure game players, they want puzzles to be challenging. And to be challenged, whereas maybe modern game players who don't have a huge amount of time might not want to be too challenging, might get too frustrated. I know you already spoke about that, James, about trying to add puzzles conceptually into the game. But how do you strike that balance or what are your thoughts on it? Do you just focus on one part or,
so I think,
or how do you go about it?
So in the graphic novel and specifically in the game, therefore, the phone is kind of like Rufus's kind of crux, isn't it? It's like, it's his, you know, like when he's in the village, there's no reception, his phone won't work, which obviously frustrates him and cuts him off. When he's in the real world, it's, you know, he's kind of, messages are coming through, calls, notifications, and he's always kind of on the phone, as it were, making kind of, you know, choices or, choices, I guess. So in the game, we use the phone as a very kind of like, not a hint system, but it's got everything on there. So you can check your messages when you want, you can check the notifications, you can make a call. And when you're in the village, again, no spoilers, but you find notes around. And when you pick them up, the note like goes into your phone, you get a buzz, even though there's, you know, no reception in the village.
It's a magic phone by this point.
Yeah, it's become a magic phone. So you look on your phone when you picked up a note and the note is in the phone and it is essentially a hint or some kind of, you know, riddle, if you will, to help you kind of get on your way. So I think the hint system will be in the phone as part of the game, but not like some... you know, games where it's like, give me a hint, give me a better hint, just tell me. It's going to help you, but it's not going to get away completely because I think we have the internet. So we can walk through if you really want to find the answer to something. So there will be a bit of a hint, but it will be more enjoyably riddlesome, if you will.
Well, that's why we use a narrator as well, right? So we've got an omniscient narrator, you know, sort of children's TV style, like in The Night Garden, it's Derek Jacobi. We've got a fella who manages to do quite a fruity Brian Blessed sort of style voice. And you know, that voice is there to infuriate and hint and sometimes hinder Rufus's progress, and therefore you as a player. So there's stuff there, and I think with the sort of hint thing, you know, most of the hints that James has put in there, it's very story focused. It's following the story. It's not just here's a hint, hi, and that's the thing with you know.
Yeah, I can't take stories. You out of it as well.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And this thing with stories, I mean, you know, if it's built up sensibly, you know, you're the first everything that happens in the finale really is set up in the first act of a story. So, you know, I always find that, you know, yes, there are twists and plots and surprises, but when you work back from that twist and plot twist, you know, it does make sense within the logic of the story, and everything you needed to get that twist is there in act one. And I think that's a similar sort of process here, where, you know, there's a lot of stuff where we do have these little hints, but there are also bits of dialogue which are hints, and you might not recognize them as hints as such. And then every now and again, the narrator comes down from on high and says, "You sure about that?"
Yeah, exactly. He will suggest things sometimes, this narrator, like, you know, wouldn't you want to be doing that over with that thing, you know? So we have both. We have this narrator who's kind of guiding, you know, whoever this narrator is, plus a little hint system in the phone. But neither will be hitting you over the head with some kind of answer.
Perfect. Now that sounds great as well. No, I know I am keeping you guys, but I wanted to ask you about the acting, because from what I played, it was fantastic. So what can you tell us about who's the narrator and who plays Rufus as well, and the actors in the game that you got?
So, you know, we're very lucky that we have, in our creative worlds, you know, we have, you know, many actor friends, you know, musicians, writers, blah, 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 you name it. Hence why we can pull on all these wonderful people to help with us. And one of my good friends, Justin Staley, is a wonderful drummer, wonderful actor, a very funny guy. And he just seemed perfect to be Rufus, because he's just, you know, in knowing him, how he can get stressed out or act that kind of... Mm-hmm. Those roles, he just seemed perfect to play Rufus, and as I say, actor as well. So
got that sort of everyman quality about him.
And swears brilliantly as well.
Oh so. My God! When we did a session in, so you know, James's band's studio, we did a session recording all the dialogue, and we were pushing him on the swearing at one point. And you know, on the raw takes of the audio, you can hear James and I cackling like absolute hyenas in the background as we're pushing him to take it further and further and further. You know, we are grown men and we have children and, you know, responsibilities and stuff, and we are still swearing at making someone swear at different volumes. It's ridiculous, but it, you know. He was amazing anyway, because he got the, you know, if he could go large, but he could also go small and do the kind of you know, that sort of small emotional moment to this big over the top ridiculous C-bomb.
So he's fantastic. And Matthew Early, who's a wonderful actor, is in King Gary on BBC One, if you've ever seen that, and other stuff. And like one of the things he does, which is really funny, is this Brian Blessed impersonation. Again, if you look up Matthew Early on Facebook or YouTube, he does these kind of like small little videos where he's like playing Brian Blessed. And I just thought he would be perfect because he has a very larger than life, you know, voice. And yeah, he agreed to do that. So you know, we have him in as well, which is fantastic, and some other wonderful actors who are, which is really kind of funny because they're getting bigger and bigger behind the scenes. since they started, you know, doing the voices. So the guy who plays the charity. What do you call it, worker in the opening scene, he's in this like Red Eye show on ITV, this big like,
oh wow,
yeah, and he was in like the last series of Killing Eve. Like, it's like,
oh really,
wow,
good,
get oh, wow,
keep getting them in, yeah,
riding those coattails to...
exactly.
That's, Oh, that's fantastic. And then go ahead. To be interrupt.
That is like a real perfect kind of full circle piece. Is we have Brian Blessed's daughter, who's an actress, who does the voice of Rufus's wife. And Rufus's daughter. So, like, you know, if we can't have the real Brian Blessed, we'll certainly have his daughter.
Blessed Junior.
Yeah. Oh, that, as you said, to bring it full circle.
Yeah. Justin is awesome as a narrator. You know, Matthew. I've been running for days. Matthew is like, you know, when I was writing, the narrator is the most fun character to write. And in my head, I always had it as Derek Jacobi, and then James says, you know, why don't we try this with a sort of Brian Blessed sort of voice? And then suddenly we get these first files, the first, you know, Matthew's first attempts at doing the narrator, and it was just, oh my god, this is better than I even, you know, I never imagined it would be this good. He is perfect. And he'd send all these takes, and it was really hard choosing between the sort of four takes of each line, because each one he would do something different and brilliant with each of it. One day I'm going to sample them all into some sort of ridiculous dance record. It's going to be amazing.
No, sound fantastic. And then so we know the voice acting is good. And then I presume, are you guys doing the music? Because you guys have background in, you know, in music with bands. And so I assume that you guys are doing the music for the game?
Yeah, it's all on me. Because a lot of working with, James's brother is my publisher for music for Sync. So, you know, stuff that you hear in the background in TV and so on. And I really wanted to do something soundtracky. So, yeah, all of the music's down to me. At some point, I'm going to leave a space for a ripping bass solo and get James to record that. But it's quite nice to...
That would be great, actually.
Yeah, just suddenly Seinfeld style or something.
Yeah, yeah.
It's something I really enjoy doing. It's my same place, and it's nice, you know. I had quite a distinct idea for what I wanted to do with the soundtrack for this, you know, for starting the publicizing for the comic. I'd already written this kind of theme tune piece that I was going to use when that eventually came out, and so we had that, and it's just expanding upon that, and it's nice to be able to be pushed a bit, you know, and like throw different ideas at it. I think there's an interesting thing with children's TV and horror movie soundtracks in that they both use very similar sort of instrumentation, but just in very different ways. It's sort of, you can write a piece one way and it will sound very children's TV appropriate. And then you just need to add a little discord, a little discomfort underneath that, and suddenly exactly the same melody becomes super sinister. And I'm quite enjoying playing around with that at the moment, and lots of sort of natural sounds. But then we turn it into this sort of weirder stuff as well. I'm trying to remember who we were thinking of. I listened to quite a few soundtracks anyway, and but I've been trying to, you know, just for the nature of being in a home studio, I've been trying to avoid having that sort of quite heavily synthesizer sort of sound for this, because I think it needs to be that sort of quite, I love synths, as you can see, but it wouldn't be appropriate for this. It needs that sort of bouncy with an undercurrent of existential horror kind of thing underneath it that only a glockenspiel can give you.
Yeah
No, I remember the music was particularly good, appropriate when I played the demo. Oh, as well. So again, looking forward to the full experience. Now, the very final thing I wanted to ask you is, because we mentioned this, so we've heard a lot about the game, but this game is currently at time recording on Kickstarter, that you're asking for, you know, for it to be funded. And hopefully the people who are listening to this can, if you were on the fence, you can go, you know, be like, yeah, no, be give it a shot, because it does look amazing. What can you tell us about, apart from the game itself, what can you tell us about some of the rewards that people can get if they shoot back?
So you get one of the kind of lower tiers, you get your name in the game and the end credits. There's loads of awesome physical stuff. We've got really nice boxes with like a newspaper in there that Rufus, you know, reads.
Oh, lovely.
Novel. There's like a village map as well, because in the game you will be able to like pull up a map to then, you know, double click and get places quicker as different locations open. So there'll be a physical map. There's the game on a USB stick as well, which is bespoke and has the logo and specific colors on. You can get little metal pins of Mimi and Bumper T. I think it's Bumper T, no, Duddle. I know this means nothing, these names, until you play the game, but of the villagers. What have I forgotten? There's a making of book, which is digital and physical.
Yeah.
With the newspaper and the map, that's physical and digital. You can have your name on the headstone, on one of the headstones in the Broken Toy Cemetery as well. And so that's kind of a big, vast area. You can be executive producer on there. You can get a Woolly Mountain box as an add-on as well, if you have it, like a really nice one. Or also, if you so inclined,
soundtrack.
The soundtrack, digital soundtrack as well. There's loads of really cool stuff. And there's loads of different tiers of things. So you can throw stuff on as add-ons, kind of make your own package, or go for one of the rewards. So it's all rendered beautifully. So if you go on the Kickstarter page, you'll see it all there. To choose from. So I very much recommend, of course I do, but you know, the money, we really did work out what we need in terms of the voice acting, art being drawn, the characters, the animation, everything. So it's not just a, you know, made up number. It purely will get the game made. So yeah.
Perfect. So again, Sleepy Time Village, it's on Kickstarter. I presume it's on Steam then as well, is it? It's on you can wish list.
Yeah, Steam, Bog, Itch, it's all there for you to play the demo and, you know, jump in.
And is it available on GOG as well? Or
Yeah, it's on there too. So,
perfect. You know. So DRM free and all of that. So that's, I'm sure people will be delighted to hear that. Is the comic available?
Not yet. So we've got three more pages left to go, and then we are done. So I suspect, you know, obviously it's been a little bit delayed, but... with a bit of luck, we'll get it finished in the next couple of months. It'll be down to the publisher then, whether it comes out late this year or early next year. It's quite exciting. You know, I'm quite looking forward to it.
Yeah, because I'd be very curious to read, very interested to read that as well.
Yeah, I've not gone back and added game hints into it. So there's no, you know, outside of it. I mean, part of me is tempted to stick an Easter egg or two, but it's, you know, but yeah, I mean, basically, Yulia's just got to finish up a few pages. I think we got to a version that was finished, and it just felt like there was one missing piece of the jigsaw, and it took ages to write that missing piece, but we got it in there, and the art's in progress at the moment. So, but obviously Yulia has a day job, so loads of stuff to work around that. So but it's coming, and I'm looking forward to it. It'll be nice to have the two, you know. I think it's nice having this thing that, you know, it's a game, it's a book, it's going to be a soundtrack, you know,
different,
that kind of nice,
different things, different ways to enjoy it. I'd be very interested in reading the comic as well when it comes out. So, and it's nice, I think, to compare the two.
Yeah,
have the two side by side.
And you know, it's a great companion piece to the other. So you'll be like, love it. Then the game will come out, which expands the world even more, and it's almost like what's happening between pages. Mm.
Piece, as you said, you had to complement each other. And that's fantastic. Thank you very much. Guys, I could spend another couple of hours talking to you guys, but as we've established, you guys have families and other things that you want to do. But first of all, where can people find you, Stephen or Steve, if they want to know more about your work and more about what you do? Do you have any website?
I'm in the process of sorting website out because I'm useless. Okay. I am on Instagram as Stephen Horry Makes Stuff, or most of my music is part of an electronic pop duo, which is called Prismatic, which is spelled with a QK rather than a C.
Okay.
And I've been mostly using Blue Sky lately because I never really particularly liked
it. I joined it for the podcast. I haven't used it much, but...
No, that's quite nice so far.
I'm sure it's nicer than Twitter.
You know, catching my hand in a mangle is more... nicer than Twitter. I'm quite enjoying it. So and that's stephenhorry.bsky.com social or whatever their thing is, but yeah, just Stephen Horry. And so Stephen Horry makes stuff, and Stephen Horry, imaginative like that.
Yeah, perfect. And James, where can people find out more about you and the games you're working on? Again, I will include them in the show notes and in the description.
So lightfootbrosgames.com, everything's on there. Our handle is lightfootbrostm across all the social media stuff. So have a little look.
Perfect. I said you're quite active there supporting other indie adventure game projects as well. So so thank you so much for coming on. It's been an delight. It's been an absolute delight speaking to you, and I wish you the very, very best of luck with the Kickstarter. I really, really hope it makes its goal. And again, the game looks fantastic, and I'm sure it will be great from everything that you've said. And if people are listening to this after the Kickstarter, you can still wishlist, you can still help, and you can still buy the game if and when it's available. Different places. James is a man of options, as we discovered, which is great. You can buy it on Steam, on GOG, itch, wherever you wish. So is there anything else that you would like to mention before we finish?
No, that's it. For me, thank you very much. And it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us, mate. Much appreciated.
Thank you. So that was my interview with James Lightfoot and Chris Horry working on Sleepy Time Village. And I hope you enjoyed that as much as I enjoyed speaking to them. So once again, a huge thank you to James and Chris for joining the podcast and for speaking to me. I had a wonderful time. I could have spoken to him for another couple of hours happily about the Kickstarter and about the game, but we all have different things that we need to do, and they're busy, as I'm sure you notice as well. But if you like what you hear, and if you are interested in the game, I'd encourage you to check out the Kickstarter if you're listening to this during the time of the Kickstarter. If you can, and if you are interested, I would encourage people to back. I did. I backed the game, and I hope that it succeeds. And that I'm looking forward to playing the game as well. And if you are listening to this after the Kickstarter, you can still help by wishlisting the game on Steam or GOG. I believe you can wishlist on GOG or anywhere you can. And then buying the game when it is available. So that is it for this week, for this episode. I hope you enjoyed that. Still plenty more to come. You can head on over to our YouTube channel. There's a full interview with Charles Cecil is there at Reboot. Plus other interviews as well. I will be uploading reviews of the adventure narrative games I did at Reboot. And I will be uploading parts of the interviews as well of I did at Reboot. Plus there will be an interview with very special guests coming up probably this Friday. And so plenty more to come over the next few months. And this year and beyond as well. So make sure to subscribe. Make sure to like the episode. Go to subscribe to YouTube. Like the videos. Share. You can as well. We also have a Patreon if you are interested as well. You can get all these episodes earlier as well. One day or two earlier as well. Plus some extras as well. Anyway, I'm going to stop rambling. Thank you as always for listening. And I will chat to you all very, very soon. So take care, everybody. And goodbye.
If you like the Adventure Games podcast, then please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. Please leave a review on iTunes if you can, as every review helps, and reviews will help get the word out, especially for adventure game developers who appear on the podcast. Now, you can also follow me on social media. You can follow me on Twitter at Advent Game Pod. You can follow me on Facebook at Adventure Games Podcast. You can also follow me on Instagram at Adventure Games Podcast as well. And we're also on Discord at Adventure Games Podcast. So if you are a adventure game developer or a adventure game player, you can follow us there. So again, please feel free to retweet and share podcast episodes and the podcast to people who believe may enjoy it. And you can also find more information about the podcast on www.adventuregamespodcast.com. So until next time, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.